There is propaganda in the NFL right now. I don't know who started it, but we the fans have bought it, and it's annoying as hell.
I'm going straight to the top, just put the sack on the clock. I am Ray Allen's a shot. I'm going straight to the top.
Yo, welcome to the Sports in the Rip podcast. My name is Mike Fairman. Very first episode. I appreciate you tuning in, tapping in, wherever you are, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, whatever it is. Thanks for spending a few minutes of your day with me. This podcast has been a long time coming, so I'm glad it's finally here. Obviously, the title says it all. We're going to talk a lot about sports. That's what I'm good at. That's what I enjoy the most. I'm a sports fan, diehard. As I was growing up, you know, sports was really my only like thing that I loved. My main interest, my only interest, right? I wasn't diversified like that. Not a great thing, but hey, it is what it is. But as I've gotten older, I've realized that just focusing on sports ain't gonna cut it. Being a dad, a family man, things that matter, conversations that matter as you grow older. So I wanted to use this podcast as a platform so it could serve as an intersection between sports for sports lovers and real conversations that impact everyday life, our communities, our families, so on and so forth. So that's what I'll be doing. You're probably wondering, why am I sitting in my gym rack? That's because the gym is where a lot of conversations happen, good or bad, right? Some of my deepest and most important conversations have happened in the gym. Specifically, I remember, you know, coming out of, or when I was an undergrad, I remember it was in a gym. It wasn't actually weightlifting. It was playing basketball, where this older gentleman, you know, gave me advice that served me till this day, right? I probably wouldn't be where I am right now without his advice. So I was in school, about to graduate. You know, there weren't really any jobs available because market had crashed. This was like the dot-com bust or whatever. And he was like, hey, you should get an MBA, you know, with the undergraduate degree you're getting, you should get an MBA, blah, blah, blah. I had never considered that. You know, ended up looking into it, ended up getting an MBA and getting a job soon afterwards that led me to a pretty fruitful career, right, that I probably wouldn't have had if I didn't get that MBA. So that's an example of good conversations that I've had in the gym. I've also had other great conversations, deep conversations with, you know, with folks, you know, when you're hanging out, you know, on the bench, you just lost a game, right? Nothing to do. But I've also heard bad conversations, bad advice in the gym, right? You know, the gym bros, bro science, as some call it, right? About how to eat and lift weights and this worked for me, you should try it too, you know. Having dudes taking things that's going to kill them sooner than later, but they don't know it yet. So I want to use this platform to not only talk about sports, but to talk about the important stuff, the good stuff, and to, you know, not only have me on here talking, but hopefully have professionals on here to provide advice on health and finances and family and mental health and things that as adult men that we should be focusing on, right? That really matter, more important than sports, even though if you looked at us, you know, from afar, at least from me, you would think, you know, sports is the most important thing because I watch sports. I enjoy it. But, you know, there is more to us, more to me, and more to you than just sports. So that's what this forum is going to be about, all right? We're going to have a good time. We're going to laugh. We're going to get serious sometimes, but I hope it's enjoyable to you. It's enjoyable to you as I intended for it to be, for me at least. All right. So let's get into today's topic. Sports and the real shit. Today we're going to focus on just sports, right? Topic today is just sports. So anyone who's ever worked in marketing or sales knows the importance of having someone or your customers to repeat the message that you've told them, right? So the best way to sell, to make money off of any product, any marketing, anything, is once you have other people speaking on your behalf, then you have a legit product and you're going to have legit sales. All right. And that's not just for sales and products. That goes for anything, religion, politics, whatever you want to call it, right? Whatever it is, you got to have foot soldiers essentially who are willing to tell your story on your behalf, right? There's 12 disciples in Christianity, right? Supposedly. And now the world is, you know, at least our society, Western society, is primarily Christian, right? Politics, whichever side you fall on, right? The people on that side, they have to believe what you're selling and they have to be willing to tell other people about it on your behalf. Right? When that gets to be too much or overboard, right? When the marketing and gets overboard, it can become what some call propaganda, right? So what starts off as marketing, good sales pitch, right? I'm going to run for president and I'm going to do this, that, and the other. It turns into somebody else telling their friend, and everybody believes it, that I'm this great person. I'm going to do this, that, and the other. And now I can tell them anything and they're going to believe it. And they're going to repeat that message to their friends, right? That's how propaganda starts. But that's great marketing. Propaganda is essentially great marketing, right? It has a bad connotation. I mean, maybe it is bad. I don't know. But the NFL, there is propaganda in the NFL right now. I don't know who started it, but we the fans have bought it. And it's annoying as hell. I can't lie. It's on TV, social media. Even, you know, media guys who you know, would trust to not be the propaganda type, they're all over the propaganda. They're in on it. They don't know that they're in on it, but they're in on it. They've been sold. And they're selling you. They're selling us. And some of us have bought in. Right? The propaganda that I'm referring to is what some refer to as the elite quarterback. These are supposed to be like super quarterbacks. They're magical. They're godlike. They can do anything no matter what's in their way. They'll overcome. They'll win this and that and the other. Right? The elite quarterback. Everybody now is looking for an elite quarterback. Pat Mahomes. Josh Allen, right? The elite quarterback who supposedly, no matter what you put in front of them, they'll win. No matter the obstacle, they'll win, right? Well, it started off as great marketing to pit great quarterbacks against each other, Peyton Manning versus Brady, has turned into propaganda about so-called elite quarterbacks. Elite quarterbacks, end quote. But one thing about marketing is that it makes you believe and it makes you suspend reality. It can make you suspend reality in your message. For example, I'm going to get in trouble for this, right? Great marketing is why Yeezys became so popular, right? So Adidas was able to convince you that Yeezys were so comfortable and to buy them, even though their shoes are ugly as heck. I call them runway shoes, right? Those are shoes that, you know, Paris Fashion Week or New York, whatever it is, New York Fashion Week. Those are shoes you see on those stages that, you know, the models wear, but in real life, nobody really wears them. But we convinced ourselves that Yeezys were so comfortable that we had to get them and pay, you know, X amount of dollars for them. Even though when you think about it, if you just wanted comfortable shoes, you can get some Skechers or something, right? Nothing against Skechers. What it is, what it is. We don't associate Skechers with fashion. But the truth is, Yeezys are not good-looking shoes. But A, they were associated with a superstar. And B, somehow we got convinced that they're so comfortable. So now you have people online fighting, you know, talking about how comfortable these shoes are. You know, that's why I'm getting them. No, you're getting them because Kanye's name is on them. If I sold you those shoes, you wouldn't have bought them if it was my name on them. Right? So you bought into the marketing. Crocs. You bought into the marketing. Crocs are so, Crocs have been around for years, decades. Nurses and doctors wear them all the time. They've been saying they're comfortable. All of a sudden, now everybody wearing Crocs because they're comfortable. No, you're wearing them because the marketing has gotten out of hand. I don't know who started it. But now everybody wearing Crocs. So everywhere. Come on, man. Anyway, so that's how marketing works. That's how marketing can turn into propaganda, because it makes you believe things that really aren't true, but you've suspended reality and now you believe it to be true and you're willing to spread the gospel and fight others and make others believe what you believe about Crocs and Yeezys and your political beliefs, even though it's clearly not true. I've fallen for it. I'm not going to sit here and act like I don't fall for any kind of marketing techniques. No, good marketing can get anybody, right? And it becomes propaganda, depending on your viewpoint. So the NFL has a problem with this elite quarterback conversation because the media is pushing this thing as not just great quarterbacks, but these elite quarterbacks who are able to take bad situations and make them great, right? You need an elite quarterback to win the Super Bowl. So if you don't have Pat Mahomes, if you don't have Josh Allen, if you don't have Joe Burrow, these guys who the media have elevated to elite status, then you ain't going to win nothing. You have zero chance. Meanwhile, everyone else is a mid quarterback, right? Mid quarterbacks can't elevate bad situations. Nah, they're not good enough. Everything needs to be perfect around them for them to succeed. They get carried, right? Their defense carries them. Their receivers carry them. They're not that good. Elite quarterbacks, though, they don't need all that. They don't need receivers. They don't need O-lines. They don't need defenses. They could win it all by themselves. That's what we've been told the last couple of years in the media. And I'm telling you, respected media personalities are saying this kind of stuff, like so-and-so, you know, he's not good enough to compete with a Pat Mahomes. What? Quarterbacks don't play each other, man. Tom Brady never played Peyton Manning. They don't play one-on-one. If Tom Brady played Peyton Manning, that would be the most boring game ever. It would end 0-0 because those are the two most unathletic dudes on the face of the planet to ever touch a field. They were great quarterbacks, though. But Tom Brady played against Patriots defenses. Sorry, Tom Brady played against Colts defenses, and Peyton played against Patriots defenses. Right? But now you hear, well, so-and-so can't beat Pat Mahomes. What does that mean? He's not, the other quarterback is not playing against Pat. So we've fallen for it. And now a large majority of fans, you can't have a conversation with fans online until they bring up the word elite and throw it around. Elite. And people in the media, elite. And I'm here to tell you there's no such thing. There are great quarterbacks, but there's no such thing as elite quarterbacks who turn water into wine, who perform miracles, godlike figures. No. People who win Super Bowls are pretty good teams. The quarterback may just happen to be great, but their teams are also really good, and their coaching and structure is really good. And I say this because I'm a Miami Dolphin fan, right? Grew up a Miami Dolphins fan, 30 plus years. I grew up on Dan Marino, who I think is the greatest quarterback ever. I don't care what nobody say, rings or no rings. There's nothing these dudes doing now that Danny didn't do in his days. Like slinging the ball, watch the highlights. Pinpoint accuracy, quick release, movement in the pocket. Like Marino was that dude. He was him. Right? Ain't nothing these dudes doing now Marino couldn't do. Now, once he got hurt, he couldn't move no more, so he couldn't throw on the run. But man, that man knew how to manage a pocket like nobody's business, and his accuracy is second. I wouldn't put anybody ever that I've watched with my own eyes, including in today's day and age where dudes are running wide open, with the accuracy of Dan Marino. But Dan Marino never won a Super Bowl with us, man. So while Dan Marino was setting records as that dude in the league, and everybody knew it, Troy Aikman won 3 Super Bowls. Why? Well, he had Emmitt Smith, Michael Irvin, the greatest O-line ever, probably. Great defenses. Great coach. Troy was not as good as Dan Marino. Not even close. He would admit that. He said that, actually. Right? And in rooms where there are other great quarterbacks, back in those days, like, cats looked up to Danny. Marino was that guy, upper echelon, top of the top. So Joe Montana has 4 rings. Well, Joe Montana's the greatest because he's 4-0 in the Super Bowl. Joe Montana played on some really good teams, great teams. Right? Not taking anything away from Troy and Joe. But come on, we have eyes, man. We can see who's who and what's what. And even Joe has admitted, like, if Dan Marino had my team, he would be the one with 4 rings. Jim Kelly. Miami would get their butts whooped almost every year when they played Buffalo in the playoffs because Buffalo had the better team. Jim Kelly was a great quarterback. Great quarterback. Jim Kelly was not Dan Marino. But Jim Kelly played on some great Buffalo Bills teams, man. Thurman Thomas, Hall of Famer. Andre Reed, Hall of Fame receiver. Bruce Smith, one of the best DNs to ever do it. So while Marino was like a one-man band, and if he didn't play well, the team struggled in the playoffs, which you're going to play good defenses in the playoffs, and if it's just you, you're probably going to struggle, especially back in those days when you could kill the quarterback, right? So Jim Kelly and the Bills would eliminate the Dolphins consistently in the playoffs, especially when they went up to Buffalo in those really bad temperatures and weather, right? But they had the better team. Not that one Jim Kelly was better than Dan Marino. So I say all that to say is I've seen greatness. I know what greatness looks like. But greatness at one position, at the quarterback position, will not take you to a Super Bowl championship if that's the only thing you have. But fast forward 20, 30 something years, the media wants us to think that football has changed, that it's 1-on-1 now. It's not 11-on-11, right? So all you need is this fantasy elite quarterback. Let's keep drafting elite quarterbacks every year. Psych, they lie to you and you believed it. And you have people getting paid money to repeat that lie now. Ridiculous. So does Peyton Manning win without Tony Dungy? Right? He needed that coaching. He had Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne. Right? So if people are going to say, well, Marino, that's far back. Okay, Peyton Manning. What about Tom Brady? Tom Brady is a great quarterback. People call him the GOAT. But his situation wasn't too shabby. Great coach. Great defenses. Right? Well, that was 10 years ago. What about now? Patrick Mahomes is carrying his team. Is he? So I'm recording this 3 days after the Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes just won another Super Bowl. Shout out to Pat. Great quarterback. He's probably the best of the generation. But people acting like Pat won by himself. He threw for 180 something yards Sunday. Cool. Three touchdowns. I think one set up by a long return. Long punt return. But it's not even that. People act like Patrick Mahomes walked into a bad situation. Like the Chiefs weren't perennial playoffs every year. Like Andy Reid was in a Hall of Famer before Pat got there. Like Andy Reid is like the best play caller probably ever. Play designer, play caller. So Kansas City had dudes running open all over the field the other day against what was supposed to be a good Eagles defense. But dudes was wide open all the time. Yeah, Pat made the throws. And he's going to get the credit. But Andy Reid is a gold standard play caller, play designer before Patrick Mahomes got there. So you don't think that helps him? That helps him flourish? You think Patrick Mahomes is great with Adam Gase in the New York Jets a couple years back? Heck, Pat even admitted that first couple of years he couldn't read defenses. So imagine that guy can't read defenses with Adam Gase. In a bad situation. Come on, man. We probably don't know Pat today. Oh, well, if we know him for bad things. We're calling him a scrub, probably. I don't know. And that's not to diminish Pat. I mean, the guy's great again, but Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid was a Hall of Famer before Pat. Travis Kelce was a Hall of Famer. With or without Patrick Mahomes. That's a fact. And he walked into Tyreek. Tyreek's going to the Hall of Fame with or without Pat. You can't stop him one-on-one. And in Andy Reid's offense, come on now. So you walk into a situation with maybe top 3-5 receiver, I don't know. Best pass catching tight end. Best play calling coach. And you've got talent. Yeah, you're going to put up some numbers. So you're going to win MVP and you're going to look great. But don't give me this thing that, well, you know, he's carrying bums. No, even without Tyreek, like Andy Reid knows how to get dudes open, man. I can get open with the Andy Reid offense. I don't know how he does it. He's just smarter than everybody else, apparently. So Pat did great, and he wasn't on some great team that you would call a dynasty this year, but let's not act like he was playing with nothing, right? But hey, mid QBs are supposed to, the so-called mid QBs, they're supposed to play with, they're supposed to take bad situations, bad coaches, bad O-line, bad defenses, bad receivers, right? And make them great. So Joe Burrow is elite, right? He walks into the league first year. What was he, 2-7 or something like that before getting hurt? But now his receivers are Ja'Marr Chase, top whatever in the league. Top five. It ain't five. Ain't four, probably. You got Jamar. He got T. Higgins. So Jamar Chase and T. Higgins are two number one receivers. So Joe Burrow has two number one receivers on his team. And one of the very best slot receivers, Tyler Boyd. But we're going to call him elite. And I'm not saying Joe's not great. I'm just saying he gets to be called elite in a great situation offensively. Yeah, his O-line is not the greatest. But hey, if you're ever under pressure, just throw it up to Jamar, man. Throw it up to T. Catch that thing in a double team, right? Again, it's not to bring down the quarterbacks. This elite conversation is just annoying because the people who we call elite are actually in really good situations. The people who we call mid are not in the greatest situations, right? Now, if someone's in a really good situation and they're not performing, then you could say, okay, you know, he's not that guy, right? But if it's obvious someone is lacking the talent around them, their O-line's not good, their defense not good, their coaching is not great, receivers aren't really top-notch, you say, oh, this quarterback's mid. Like, where's the context in this evaluation to say one person's mid and one person's elite, right? Besides looking at fantasy numbers, which apparently even the people in media who are supposed to be evaluators are doing, they're just looking at numbers. Numbers and highlights, red zone channel. If that's all you're looking at to make a decision as to who's elite and who's not, then I guess luck of the draw. If your team is good, you'll be elite. Jalen Hurts, Tua. When your team's not good, you won't be elite. Jalen Hurts, Tua. So you think it's a surprise that Tua looks amazing now? I'm a Dolphins fan, by the way. So I'm not sitting here bashing Tua. But you think it's a surprise that previous years Tua wasn't looking all that great? Didn't have the supporting cast. This year, great coach, great play caller, designer. Mike McDaniels, right? Got Cheetah on the squad. Jalen Waddle doing his thing. Two of the fastest dudes in the league. Great play caller. You think Tua just became good or his team got better? His supporting cast got better. What about Jalen Hurts? Last year, and we can look up the tweets and the social media posts and even, maybe even articles and people in the media talking heads, right? Wondering if the Eagles should go draft another quarterback after Jalen didn't look that great in the playoffs against Tampa Bay last year. He did not look great in the playoffs, right? He struggled. Team around him wasn't that great. I mean, he was a second-year player, first year really starting. So Jalen really got better. His accuracy got better, but his team also got better. A.J. Brown is a stud. You can't guard him one-on-one. Devontae Smith is a baller, right? Goddard gets open, and his O-line is the best in the league, so he has all day to throw. Like, he pretty much runs when he wants to. He doesn't really have to. Don't really have to scramble, man, when you got 10 seconds to throw the ball. Really good defense. So they go to the Super Bowl this year. So Jalen Hurts is all of a sudden elite. But there is not a single person outside of probably Philadelphia fans or something who would have considered Jalen Hurts to be elite after last year's playoff performance. So yeah, Jalen made strides. He clearly worked in the offseason, right, to get better. Clearly. But that jump was supported by his supporting cast. So here's what I think happens, right, when it comes to this elite mid quarterback conversation. is to be considered elite, you have to have success early on and with the original team that drafted you. Okay? So, lucky for Tua, lucky for Jalen, they're having success right now. Right? Lucky for Joe Burrow, they're having success right now. Because if they were to not have success for the first 4 years, let's say get traded to another team and then have similar setup with another team, they would be called mid and getting called carried by the people around them. You know how I know that's what happens? I'm a Dolphins fan, so I've been following Ryan Tannehill's career, obviously. And I watch Ryan Tannehill play on bad team after bad team with the Dolphins. We never really had a good coach around him. Joe Philbin, Adam Gase. No real weapons. He had Jarvis Landry. Good receiver, good hands, but wasn't really a threat downfield. Brought in Mike Wallace for a couple of years, but he was a disappointment. So I watched Ryan Tannehill go from being labeled a bust in Miami, getting traded to Tennessee Titans in 2019, taking over a team that was 2-4 at the time. They had the previous two games, they had scored a total of 7 points combined. 7 points. That was with Derrick Henry, with AJ Brown, with Mike Vrabel, who everyone calls a genius now, with Arthur Smith, who became the Golden Boy offensive coordinator turned head coach. Team was 2-4. Jonnu Smith, Corey Davis, right? Who ended up getting a big contract once Tannehill got there. So Tannehill comes to the Tennessee Titans in 2019. They're 2-4, had scored 7 points total in their previous two games. They go on a run. He takes over for Marcus Mariota. They go on a run. They make the playoffs. In the playoffs, Derrick Henry goes ballistic. He gets all the credit for their success. Everybody overlooks the fact that Tannehill was added to that team and was the driver behind that success. Right? Derek was there the whole time. AJ was there the whole time. Right? But they were still 2-4, weren't scoring any points. They weren't going anywhere that year. I don't care what Titans fans say. They weren't going anywhere. But Tannehill takes over. Boom. They go on a run, make the playoffs, and surprise everybody in the playoffs. Right? Following year, Tennessee Titans have a terrible defense. One of the worst in the league. The O-line, that was pretty good the year before, is not as good that year in 2020. But they manage a top five offense. Tannehill has 33 passing touchdowns, 7 running touchdowns for a total of 40. Right? Top five offense, balling out. But Derek goes for over 2,000 yards rushing, so he gets all the credit. So now when you talk about Tannehill's career, it's he got carried by those around him. It's all Derrick Henry. It's all AJ Brown. So somebody check Derrick Henry's stats before Tannehill got there. Nobody was talking about AJ before Tannehill got there. Now, he probably would have came on eventually because he was a rookie, but who knows? That's not guaranteed, right? So now AJ becomes a household name. He ends up getting traded, right? The following year, after the 2021 season, he gets traded to the Eagles and helps them to the Super Bowl. So AJ carried Ryan Tannehill Don't miss this point. AJ carried Ryan Tannehill, right? So-called journeyman, mid guy. But he didn't carry Jalen Hurts, the young guy. He's on his first contract. He's a young guy. Second year full-time starter, right? AJ didn't carry him. He's elite. He balled out. You see how that story goes? So supposedly mid guys, like Ryan Tannehill, Derek Carr, they're expected to win in bad situations. And there is little to no proof where there is a quarterback who has succeeded and won a Super Bowl, and you're like, man, the coach is bad. Everything is just bad around him. Like this guy is in a bad situation. I couldn't think of it. So the media has convinced fans, convinced front offices that they need some elite guys. And these elite guys are guys really who, you know, they just have crazy highlight tapes, right? So that's what makes the New York Jets go draft somebody like Zach Wilson. Because they look at the highlights. There's no way you can watch full games and say, oh, Zach Wilson should have been a number two pick in the draft. No way. But he was elite traits. And we do that every year with dudes. They can throw the ball 70 yards on the run in shorts, right? Or against bad competition. They're elite. Let's go get our elite young guy, you know, franchise quarterback. That's another one. Franchise quarterback for 10 years. So you've bought into the propaganda. So I'm trying to help you get out, right? They hypnotize you. I'm trying to wake you up and get you out of there so you can wake up, wake your GM up and team up and recognize that there's no such thing as an elite quarterback that carries bad situations. You have to have a good situation in place for a quarterback to succeed. And it sucks because the only person I hear talking about that consistently and banging a drum on that in the media is Louis Riddick. Shout out to Louis Riddick. He consistently beats the drum of you having to have a structure in place for your quarterback to succeed. We give these guys way too much credit. Not that they're not great. Like I said, Pat is amazing. Ain't no hating on Pat. But if everything's not right, or if things aren't right around them, they're going to fail. They're not winning Super Bowls. So here's another thing where mid quarterbacks, right, and so-called elite quarterbacks, how they're judged. When so-called elite quarterbacks lose, their team gets the blame. Their team's not enough. Well, I thought they were supposed to carry the team, right? So Josh Allen loses in the playoffs. Well, his O-line wasn't good. They couldn't protect. Von Miller wasn't there, so they couldn't get pressure, right? So ain't nobody going to say, well, Josh just had a bad game. But mid quarterbacks, it's always their fault. They can't carry a team. They'll never win a Super Bowl. The Titans will never win a Super Bowl with Ryan Tannehill. Raiders were never going to win a Super Bowl with Derek Carr. Like, was Derek really going to win with Josh McDaniels? Come on, man. Stop. So these so-called mid-quarterbacks are judged more harshly than so-called elite quarterbacks, right? Even when elite quarterbacks have great scenarios around them, right? No, nobody looks at that. So Josh Allen wasn't that great until Stephon Diggs, who is unfreaking guardable one-on-one. Right? Stephon Diggs comes there. Josh Allen looks amazing. Imagine if Stephon Diggs wasn't there, right? And Josh Allen now has to play with somebody who can't get open as consistently as Stephon Diggs does. He throws a lot of picks now. He makes a lot of questionable decisions now. Imagine if Diggs wasn't there to give him some easy passes. I don't know. Josh Allen is amazing to watch. Ridiculous arm. Crazy athleticism. But it sure helps to be throwing a dig sometimes that you can't guard one-on-one. He's too quick. His routes are too crispy. Right? But no. He ain't carrying nothing. He plays great, but his team is also great. All right. So let me do this. I did the research for you to drive the point home. And I know this is going to be a longer podcast, first episode, but this has been bothering me for a long time. So I wanted to make sure everybody heard this. I wanted to make the point in my first episode. Stop believing the propaganda, man. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. Yes, there are great quarterbacks. They're fun to watch. Pat is fun to watch. So is Josh. But man, there is no quarterback that's going to come save your franchise if everything else isn't good. If things suck, there's no such thing as a savior that saves a bad situation. Peyton Manning came into Indy and led the league in picks with like 28 or something like that. Something ridiculous. His first year. And then as the team around him got better, coaching got better, he started to win. That's always been how it works. Unlike basketball, where LeBron James by himself can take over a franchise because he's one of five dudes on the court at a time for his team, and he can take the ball down court and shoot by himself, right? He don't need to pass it. He decides when to shoot, when to pass. He can play defense. That's not the case in football, man. You need more structure. So these so-called mid guys can't win Super Bowls. Really? You can't beat Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert. I don't know why he's up there with elite quarterbacks. Yeah, he puts up great stats, nice throws. You'll never beat Justin Herbert. You won't beat Trevor Lawrence? Trevor Lawrence is elite now? Listen, I watched Trevor Lawrence's first game at Clemson. I was like, damn, this dude is a pro now. Rocket arm, athletic. Trevor Lawrence was a pro his first college game. And some people say in high school. Some people say in high school, Trevor Lawrence was that dude, right? And I would have agreed. But Trevor Lawrence looked horrible rookie year. Bad situation. This year, he looks better because his coaching's better. Better team around him. Right? I'm not saying Trevor's not that dude, but he sure got his team around him. And now he looked much better. And I'm sure he'll continue to progress. Extremely talented. But anyway, for the mid quarterbacks out there, who those fans and media say, well, they can't win a championship. They can't beat Pat. They can't beat Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, Trevor Lawrence. Right? All the young guys in the AFC, all these young guns. They can't the mid quarterbacks, Ryan Tannehill and Derek Carr, you have no shot at beating these young guys. So I did a little bit of research. Starting with the year 2000, I went through all the Super Bowl winners. And you'll be shocked. Maybe not. You probably won't be shocked. I think you knew that. You just decided to suppress it in the back of your mind. You decided to drink the Kool-Aid. But you knew in the back of your mind what you've been hearing isn't true. But you believed it anyway. So starting with the year 2000, I went back and looked at all the Super Bowl winning quarterbacks. And I categorized them as mid or not. Mid or elite. Elite. Right? So check this out. I'm going to run off the names and some stats. We all know Trent Dilfer in 2000 with the Ravens. Number one scoring defense. That's like the poster boy for mid quarterbacks winning Super Bowls. Everything has to be perfect around them. They have to have the best defense in the world. Right? Trent Dilfer. Every once in a while, you get a Trent Dilfer. He's like the poster boy. So he had the number one scoring defense that year. We know how good that defense was. I don't need to tell you. Right? Trent was 23rd in TD passes, threw 12 TDs, 11 picks. In the playoffs, he had 3 TD passes and 1 interception. All right? So he's the poster boy. Following year, Tom Brady. Defense was number 6 in scoring defense. Tom Brady averaged 6.9 yards per passing play. Right? Yards per pass. He was 13 in touchdown passes behind guys like Jay Fiedler and Kerry Collins, who no one would consider elite ever. Right? Tom Brady that year won the Super Bowl. Takes over the job from Drew Bledsoe, wins the Super Bowl. Rest is history. But number 6 scoring defense. Tom Brady was mid. All right? First of all, Tom Brady was mid. 02, Brad Johnson, number 1 scoring defense, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Another poster boy for mid quarterbacks winning Super Bowls. Right? So I don't need to tell you the details on Brad Johnson. Right? Great defense. Warren Sapp, Derek Brooks, and the boys. Right? The next year, Tom Brady wins again. Patriots have the number 1 scoring defense. Tom is 10th in TD passes. And I know TD pass is not the only way to rate quarterbacks, right? There's other tools and other mechanisms to do that. Other things that goes into it. But, you know, that's the quick and dirty research I can do here. So 10th in TD passes behind guys like Brad Johnson, mid quarterback. And John Kitna. Number 1 scoring defense. So I would say Tom was mid still. Next year, Tom wins again. I think he was still mid. Number 2 scoring defense. But hey, he got up to 6th in TD passes that year. I would still say Tom was mid in about a third ring. But he was better. But he wasn't special. He definitely wasn't the guy that he became later on. In 05, so that was 04. In 05, Roethlisberger, number 4 scoring defense, 15th in TD passes. That's literally mid. That's the middle. And I don't need to tell you, you know, what Ben Roethlisberger did that year, because, I mean, he was young. What, his second year or something like that? Dominating defense? 4th in scoring? Yeah, another mid quarterback winning a Super Bowl, right? Peyton Manning. And by the way, I'm not even talking about, like, O-lines for these teams, right? So I know they have O-line rankings, different websites, different services have O-line rankings. I'm not even talking about O-lines. But the protection matters as well. I'm sure someone could look into those stats for each of those Super Bowl winning teams. But let's keep going. Peyton Manning in 06, 23rd scoring defense. Not that great. Peyton was number 1 in passing TDs. In the playoffs, Peyton Manning had 3 TDs and 7 picks. And by the way, that was his 9th season. So it took Peyton Manning 9 seasons to win a Super Bowl. Right? Nowadays, because our society wants everything so fast that you better win in your first couple or else you're out of there. And you're not elite anymore. And you're mid. You better win immediately. So Peyton Manning doesn't win a Super Bowl until his 9th season. And in the playoffs that year, he was not good. 3 TDs and 7 picks. And he probably doesn't win that game, if I remember correctly, against the Bears, if Rex Grossman had played okay. 3 TD, 7 picks, Super Bowl winner. Some consider him the greatest quarterback ever, second greatest, third. Definitely top five. He put up some mid stats in the playoffs. Matter of fact, Peyton was notorious for being awful in the playoffs, despite regular season success. That's another knock on mid quarterbacks. Oh, they're great in the regular season. Ryan Tannehill is great for the Tennessee Titans in the regular season, but in the playoffs, he sucks. So he'll never win. Talk to him, Peyton. Tell him about all your playoff success or not. 3 TDs, 7 picks. Following year, Eli. 17th, number 17th in scoring defense. He was 11th in pass TD. He threw 20 picks, tied for the league lead, I believe, in interceptions. In the playoffs, he played okay. 6 TDs, 1 pick. I'll give him that. But his defense shut down Peyton Manning and them boys. Not Peyton Manning. His defense shut down Tom Brady and them boys. Trying to go undefeated. But Eli played good. Had the helmet catch. But Eli was and is mid. I don't care how many Super Bowls he has. People trying to get him in the Hall of Fame. Eli was mid. Led the league in picks 3 different times. Mid. One of my best friends is a Giants fan, and I know for a fact Giants fans were ready to get rid of Eli before that Super Bowl run. They were tired of him. He was mid. He's mid. Eli ain't elite. People looking back now romanticizing Eli Manning, but nah, man. He just happened to have 2 great playoff runs. And listen to this. I would take Eli in a big game before I take Peyton. Mid quarterback over elite quarterback. The following year, 08, Ben Roethlisberger. Number 1 scoring defense. He was 15th in passing TDs. In the playoffs, he threw 3 TDs and 1 interception. Same as Trent Dilfer in 2000. 3 TDs and 1 interception. Mid. Drew Brees. In 09, number 20 scoring defense. He was first in pass TD. He balled out in the playoffs, no doubt. 8 TDs, 0 picks. Shout out to Drew Brees. Now that's elite. Elite in the regular season, elite in the playoffs. But guess what? In the middle of Drew Brees' career, he went 7-9, 7-9, 7-9. Elite quarterback couldn't get his team to 500. What'd that tell you? But he got a Super Bowl. Aaron Rodgers, 2010, number 2 scoring defense. Ooh. He was number 6 in passing TDs. In the playoffs, balled out 9 TDs, 2 picks. Aaron Rodgers, one of the best quarterbacks ever. Talent-wise, whoo. He's top of the top. He's the only cat I've seen since Dan Marino to be like, dang, this dude hot. he's up there with Danny to me. I have the homer bias. I ain't gonna front. But prime Aaron Rodgers was like that. But his defense was number 2 in scoring that year. And since then, he ain't been back to the Super Bowl, even though he's won MVPs, elite quarterback. But for whatever reason, he hasn't been back. Whether you blame him, you blame his team, his coaching, he ain't been back. So he has a Super Bowl, just won, when his defense was number 2 in scoring. All right? Following year, 11, we have Eli. I already told you about Eli. He's mid. But his defense that year was number 4 in scoring. But again, in the playoffs, he balled out. 9 TDs, 1 pick. Still mid. Joe Flacco. Come on now. Is Joe Flacco really elite? Was he carrying bad teams, making bad situations look great? Now, his defense was aging, right? Ray was on his last legs, number 20 in scoring defense, but Joe was 15 in touchdown passes. Again, I know there are better metrics than touchdown passes to determine, you know, how great someone is playing. But the truth is, nowadays, most people, right, average fan, that's all they're looking at: touchdowns and picks, yards. They're looking at fantasy numbers. Nobody's looking at advanced metrics to see that Tannehill's been top 10 in advanced metrics since he's been in Tennessee. No, in their mind, he's mid because the last couple of years with everybody injured, seemingly, his passing touchdown numbers are really low. They're not as good. And he can't carry a bad team. Carry a bad team. Who does that? Anyway, so that's Flacco, right? In the playoffs, he was crazy. So Joe Flacco, the mid quarterback, 11 touchdowns, 0 picks. Damn. Balled out. Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson's been mid to me, if you ask me. Early on, he got carried by his team. His defense was generational. Hall of Fame running back, if you ask me. Wins a Super Bowl early on. Since then, he's been considered elite. This year with Denver, not so elite. Now, I don't think Russ is as bad as he looked this year. Well, he's a good quarterback. He makes scramble plays outside of the pocket, right? That year, he had the number one scoring defense. He was 10th in passing TDs. In the playoffs, he had 3 touchdowns, 0 picks. From 2012 to 2015, Russell Wilson's record was 5-13 when the defense allowed more than 20 points. Russ wasn't elite. He was a good quarterback. He wasn't carrying people. He was getting carried, but nobody said that. He was winning games, right? Because he was still young on his rookie deal. Now, if Russ had been older and had that kind of success, oh, he's gotten carried. He got carried by Marshawn in the defense. That would have been what the media said and everyone believed. But it's the other way around because he was still young. So Russell Wilson was elite. No, he's always been mid to me. Moving on. Tom Brady. This is when Tom becomes Tom, I think, but his defense in 2014 was number 8 in scoring. One thing I found doing this research is Bill Belichick is amazing. Like, how do you have top 10 defenses almost every damn year with players moving around, not really having that many big names on defense? How do you do that? Like, what Andy Reid is to offense, Bill Belichick is to defense. And Tom benefited from that. Right. So all this, Tom is carrying bad teams because the receivers may not have been big time. Whatever, man. His defenses were always solid. Solid. So when he had a bad game, his defense was always there to back him up. Like, damn, how you have top 10 defenses all the time? So anyway, 2014, Tom Brady, number eight scoring defense. He was 5 in passing TD, 10 touchdowns, 4 picks in the playoffs. Pretty good playoff run. So I would say Tom was, we'll call him elite then, I guess. Peyton was still elite, putting up numbers in the regular season. In the playoffs, this is Peyton's last year. This is with Denver. Number 4 scoring defense. Peyton was number 2 in pass touchdowns, number 32 in pass touchdowns that year, but that's because he got hurt. So Osweiler took over. So combined with Osweiler, Peyton Manning and Osweiler that year, 22 combined touchdown passes. In the playoffs, he threw 2 touchdowns and had 1 pick. Elite or not, mid. or worse. 2016, Tom Brady, number one scoring defense again, Patriots. Tom was number seven in touchdown passes, playoffs, seven TDs and three picks. Tom was nice. We'll call him elite. 2017, Eagles, Nick Foles, stop. Mid. Number four scoring defense. In the playoffs, though, balled out. Six touchdowns, one pick. After taking over for Carson Wentz, who was balling out that year, by the way. But that team was good all around. And they caught lightning in a bottle with Nick going ham. 2018, Tom Brady, Patriots. Number seven scoring defense. Number 10 in passing TDs. In the playoffs, Tom Brady had two touchdowns, three picks. That's a mid performance or lower. I would say lower than mid. Two touchdowns, three picks. They won the Super Bowl. That's the year in the Super Bowl where Brian Flores and Belichick essentially shut down what was, what, the greatest offense of the year that year in the Rams. Made Jared Goff look like he had never played football. So that's the thing about Bill Belichick. He solved riddles that other coaches couldn't. And Tom benefited from that. I don't care what nobody say. There's a reason why Tom took pay cuts to stay. Yeah, he's benevolent and all that. Benevolent. Yeah, sure. He wants the better team around him. Yeah, he took pay cuts. Besides the fact that his wife was making a ton of money already, so they were set financially. But he also wanted to stay, man. He knew what time it was with Bill. Like, Bill had them boys ready all the time. The Patriots were always prepared, ready to play. His defense is always on point. Tom knew his legacy was going to be like out of this world staying with Bill Belichick, for sure. He's never going to admit it. But he knew that he had a chance to win almost every year in that organization because they have great structure, great coaching, and players somehow bought in, right? They wanted to win. That's not taken away from Tom's greatness. That's just a fact. That structure helps. So Tom wins in 18 again. Again, that's a ridiculous run, Tom Brady. Pat Mahomes comes in, 2019, number seven scoring defense. In the playoffs, he goes 10 TDs, two picks. It's a pretty good run. Pretty good numbers, Pat. But I already told you what I think about the Chiefs. It's not that Pat's not great. But he wasn't playing with no scrubs. His organization wasn't dysfunctional. Right? Because when he goes back to the next year against the Bucks, and his O-line is hurt and he struggles that game, everybody blames the O-line. Not that the elite quarterback who's supposed to be carrying the team couldn't get it done. O-line, right? So the Chiefs immediately fix the O-line. Ooh-wee. Funny how that works in good organizations. They recognize the problem and they fix it. So maybe as fans, you should hold your organization accountable for fixing what really matters, which is your O-line, the trenches, right? O-line, defensive line, right? That's the stuff that wins games, man. People don't want to admit it. They want to just go for the sexy stuff. Chicks dig the long ball. They dig the quarterback who throws really far. And organizations have bought into that. Why, man? How? Like, hold them jokers accountable for building good teams, not just getting a quarterback and cycling them every 3-4 years when they don't work out. Of course they don't work out. The rest of the team is not that good. And you listen to the media who's calling the quarterback mid because he can't carry guys who aren't that good. So Pat wins in 19, Tom wins in 20 with the Bucks. Number 8 scoring defense. Every year Tom Brady won, he had a top 10 defense. Ooh. He was number 2 in pass TD that year. Playoffs, 10 TDs, 3 picks. Pretty good. In 21, we have Matthew Stafford. Number 15 in scoring defense. The Rams were. Matt was number 2 in pass TDs, but he was number 1 in INTs, led the league. Playoffs, 9 touchdowns, 3 picks. But Matt Stafford, to me, is mid. Has always been. I don't care what nobody say. Right? He's just a good quarterback. So being mid is not a bad thing. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Like, being a mid quarterback is, being labeled mid is not a bad thing. Good quarterbacks win rings on good teams. Some quarterbacks are great, but you could be great on a bad team and never win. So you're not going to be in a situation where there's a great quarterback, like I said, on a bad team who wins. Like bad structure, bad O-line, bad receivers. That's not going to happen. That's a pipe dream. It's never happened. But fans believe that there's these magical godlike quarterbacks who carry teams. So Matt Stafford is a good quarterback. I would call him mid. Right? Matt Stafford has a career record of 89, 101, and 1. I'm told that elite quarterbacks, if you're going to be considered elite, you have to carry your team to victories. You have to win games despite. But people give Matt Stafford a pass because he played in Detroit. Ryan Tannehill is mid. Ryan Tannehill's career record is better, right? His percentage, winning percentage is better than Matt Stafford's. But hey, Ryan Tannehill doesn't throw no-look passes. He doesn't throw for a ton of yards. But he won games. He wins games. Right? And if it sounds like I'm caping for Ryan Tannehill, like he's some Hall of Fame quarterback, it's not that Ryan is a Hall of Fame quarterback. It's just that, to me, he's like the poster boy for what a mid quarterback is to people who don't really watch the game in detail, who only look at fantasy numbers and red zone highlights. Right? So Ryan Tannehill can never win a Super Bowl unless everything is perfect around him. When everybody else I just listed had pretty good setups. Receivers, right? Defenses. Right? To me, the so-called mid quarterbacks more often won with less than the elite quarterbacks, if we're being honest. And then this year, you know, we had Jalen against Pat in the Super Bowl. Pat wins another one, right? People are going to say, well, Tyreek wasn't there. Okay, he lost his fastest receiver, but his number one receiver is Kelce. Travis Kelce is the number one receiver. And again, Andy Reid probably counts for probably 2 receivers himself. Like, Andy Reid's play design by himself is like 2 number one receivers, man. Catch running open all the time. Like, what is going on? Why can't the Eagles get even close? Why is Kelce always open? Again, taking nothing away from Patrick Mahomes, man. The dude is a baller. All right? Best in the league right now. Best of his generation, no doubt. But don't talk about he's carrying. He plays great. He covers some holes, maybe. I think Andy Reid probably covers more holes. So out of 23, we'll say, out of 23 Super Bowls, I think 10 top 10 scoring defenses. Sorry, 17 Super Bowl winners had top 10 scoring defenses. And by my count, 15 of the teams that won had mid QBs. I just listed them out for you, right? 15 out of 23 had mid QBs. So what does that mean for you? Don't believe the hype with this elite conversation, man. There are great quarterbacks. Yes, of course, some quarterbacks are better than others. Of course. But there is no such thing as a quarterback taking a bad situation and winning a Super Bowl with it. All right? So fix your team. And then if your team is on point and you have Alex Smith and Mahomes out there, then you go grab him. But you better make sure that Mahomes is that dude. And you better make sure that your team has an infrastructure for Mahomes, a coaching, a GM. Because once Mahomes gets paid, your elite quarterback gets paid and you can't afford everybody. So now your GM has to be able to put a team together around that guy to sustain the success, to keep him at the elite level. Right? That's what you need. A situation where a team can continually be built despite free agency and your top quarterback and your quarterback getting paid. And hope for some injury luck. And you'll win a Super Bowl. Or you'll compete every year. And if you compete enough, Peyton Manning, you might luck into one. Right? So good structure, GM, coach, defense, O-line. And really what you need is a QB that makes the plays that are there, gets you out of bad situations, and hopefully can go on a playoff run and get hot. Or hope your defense plays well enough to shut down the best offenses. Right? It's not impossible to win with the mid QB. Derek Carr. So there's nothing wrong with wanting a great QB that's spectacular, who makes great plays, highlights. It's fun to watch. That's football. It's sports. It's entertaining, right? Like I said, I grew up on Dan Marino, man. My Sundays were not boring. But you know what sucked? Watching guys who weren't as good as Dan Marino winning championships. That was trash. Anyway, this is a super long podcast, y'all, for the first episode. I hope you guys hung in there with me. I appreciate it. Thanks for listening. Shout out to the mid QBs. Yeah, I think propaganda machine got us. And I'm trying to help you get out. All right. Real football fans who watch football probably know this already, that it takes a team to win. But the majority of the fans who are just watching highlights and fantasy stats, yeah, they've bought into that elite talk, and everybody else is mid. So I'm trying to help you out. That's what we do here, Sports and the Real Shit Podcast. Trying to help you out with your sports knowledge, real life knowledge. You know what I'm saying? We're gonna have a good time. But hey, again, appreciate you listening, watching. Subscribe, like, whatever it is, man. This is going to be a fun journey. I know it is. I can't wait to see what the future brings. And I hope you join me. All right. I hope you join me for this experience. It'll be fun. And I hope you learn a lot, not just about sports, but stay tuned for the real conversations. All right. Episode 1. Sports and the Real Shit Podcast. Mike Filmon. Catch you next time. I am Ray Allen's a shot. I'm going straight to the top.